Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
One of the most admired, respected, and busiest global leaders in the world is Mark Carney. He served for a number of years as the governor of the Bank of Canada, for a number of additional years as the governor of the Bank of England. He currently serves as a special UN envoy for climate action and finance, and he also chairs Brookfield Asset Management. I had a chance to sit down with Mark recently to talk about how he does all these things so well. Mark has been the Bank of Canada governor, been the governor of the Bank of England. Has anybody ever been the governor of 2 different central banks, 2 different countries?
No. I don't think so. And after
all right, so in addition to that,
probably not.
In addition to that, you are also the chairman of Brookfield Asset Management, and you are the new chairman of Bloomberg. So you obviously like B. It's Bank of Canada, Bank of England, Bloomberg, and Brookfield. But there's a story in the latest edition of a Canadian newspaper, I think 2 days ago, that's saying that you might also be the next prime minister of Canada. So any interest in that?
In the story, not in the story per se. The you know, it's interesting. You say the same thing over and over, but it gets heard differently in different contexts. And I think that story is probably more indication of the current environment in Canada.
In other words, you wouldn't be uninterested in that.
I'm interested that we have an effective prime minister in Canada.
Okay, so Prime Minister Trudeau, and you know him.
I know him well, yes, and he's done a very good job.
Okay, so, but we'll take that as maybe. All right, so I won't pursue that anymore, all right? let me ask you, as the Bank of England governor and as the Bank of Canada governor, do you think the central banks recently figured out that inflation was more serious than it was too late? Or do you think they recognized early on it was going to be serious, they just didn't do enough about it?
No, I think in hindsight, they realized it too late. They were operating under the old paradigm, if you will, that it was an issue of not enough demand, and that is something that works well generally until you have a bunch of supply shocks. And we had a COVID supply shock, we had an energy supply shock, we had supply shocks with supply chains, geopolitics, all of which meant that there was more than transitory inflation. And it took a while for some of the central banks to fully recognize that and start to respond.
Right. Now that they did recognize it, do you think they've done enough? And do you see any more rate increases likely to come about? There are many people in the market who think that maybe another rate increase in the United States is likely. What do you think about that?
Yeah, well, first part of the question, I think that once they started to move, and particularly when the Fed started to move, it did respond in a very effective manner. It consistently surprised people with its how resolute it was and what it was prepared to do. It recognized that the bigger risk was that inflation stayed high or worsened, and it has put the U.S. in a position where inflation is increasingly under control, not totally under control. And that gets to the second part of your question, which is, if I have to choose a camp, I'd be in the camp of I expect that there will be a bit more tightening by the Fed, so probably an additional rate increase this year. But what's as important, in fact, what's more important is the path of policy over the course of the next 12 to 18 months, and I think it's finally beginning to be recognized. It's been a painful few weeks for some in the market in getting this recognition that it's not just about where the rate is today. It's not just about the peak, but it's the path. And the path of rates is very much, and I've been of this view for a while, higher for longer, in order to ensure that policy is adequately tight to bring inflation fully back to that 2%.
When I was in the White House as a young man, we were running for re-election under Jimmy Carter, and the head of the inflation effort, fighting inflation effort, was a man named Fred Kahn. former Cornell professor. And he went out to the White House briefing room one day and said, I think we're going to have a recession. Well, Carter hauled him into the Oval Office and said, Fred, I'm running for re-election. Do not use the R word. It scares people. Mm. And Fred Kahn said, well, what am I supposed to do? I have to be honest. Be honest, but don't use the R word. So the next time Fred Kahn went out and he said, I think we're heading into a banana. He used the word banana as a substitute for recession, figuring reporters wouldn't put that in the headline. So are we heading into a banana, do you think, or do you think we're not going into a banana?
Well, I think the likelihood of banana has gone down, actually, to be clear. The Fed has done quite a masterful job. Other things have helped. But if you look at, and you asked me a moment ago rightly about unemployment and getting back to the 2%, what's happened in the U.S., almost uniquely in the U.S., is there hasn't been a sharp rise in unemployment. There's been a fall in vacancies, something that hasn't happened in the past. But of course, this cycle is quite different than any previous cycle. So the Fed's been able to, thus far, ease some of the pressure in the labor market by reducing vacancies as opposed to increasing unemployment. That plus the other aspects of the resilience that we've seen in the U.S. economy makes recession less likely, because the reality is, you know, if you get 0.5% or certainly a full percent, historically, any time the unemployment rate in the U.S. had risen by at least 0.5%, there's been a recession. It's just you get the compounding effect. That hasn't happened, so the probability's gone down, but there's still lots.
When you're the head of the central bank in Canada, do you kind of refer a lot to what the U.S. is doing because your economy is so tied to the U.S., or do you say, look, we're going to do what we want to do, and we don't care what the U.S. is going to do? Do you consult a lot?
We obsess about the U.S., is the short answer, because it's the most impactful external factor for the Canadian economy. And there's also some of the things that drive growth in the United States. They're common factors that drive growth and or inflation in Canada.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let's talk about your background. So where did you grow up in Canada? Where were you born?
I was born in Fort Smith in the Northwest Territories.
And
so
you're
the Arctic. So
and you're in the Northwest Territories?
Yeah.
That's very far up.
It is very far up, yeah.
So what were your
emphasis
parents?
Emphasis on the north.
Were your parents doing there?
My parents were teachers. They were teachers.
And did you ever say to them that's pretty far up north to be living? And did they ever move closer to
they moved. We moved. Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's whatever, 2-hour flight south to Edmonton, which is probably okay. The northernmost.
So did you grow up in Edmonton?
I grew up in Edmonton. I went to, school.
And so, and you were a hockey player, too?
I was a hockey player, yes.
So you played hockey at Harvard, is that right?
I did, yes, ish. I opened the gate. I was a goalie, so I opened the gate for a lot of very good players.
Really? So were you a star at Harvard in the hockey world? Or
I was very good at opening the gate, yes.
But you never considered going to the NHL?
I considered it. NHL did not consider it. Okay. Maybe in some sort of administrative role.
So after you graduated, you went to do something like investment banking, right?
Yeah.
And you went to Goldman Sachs?
I went to Goldman Sachs in London, yes, 1988.
And what did you do there?
I worked in the credit department. Credit analysis, which was probably the best thing I could have done because, you build up a fundamental skill.
Now, many people go to Goldman after college. They go and get an MBA, and you decided not to get an MBA, but to get a PhD in economics. Why did you want a PhD in economics?
Yeah, I thought that at some point I'd work in public policy, and I thought it would be more useful. And I toyed a bit with being an academic as well. My father ended up being a professor ultimately. So
you did this in Oxford. Why didn't you do a university in the United States or Canada? Why did you get all the way to England?
Yeah, it was, to be honest, you could do a PhD in Oxford in 3 years, as opposed to if you're in the U.S. system as a doctorate student, you spend a huge amount of time teaching, which is great if you're going to be an academic. If you want the academic training, though, it means that the average time is about 6 years.
So when you were at Oxford, did you also played hockey, right?
I did.
And were you?
I was a star.
Were you a star there, right? Because okay, you weren't
it
competing against other
hard.
Canadians.
I had
right?
to go. Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
You stayed at Goldman for how many years?
I was back at Goldman. In total, I was 13 years at Goldman, but eight, almost 10 years, I guess.
And so what? The highest level you reached at Goldman was to be?
A managing director.
Managing director. So
a managing director.
A managing director. Okay. So why did you leave Goldman? Some people think it's the greatest thing in the world to be a Goldman managing director. Why did you decide to leave and go back to Canada?
But I had an opportunity to become deputy governor at the Bank of Canada. I've always had an interest in public policy. It was a unique opportunity, and I fully, huge respect for the guy who was governor at the time, David Dodge. And
right. So how would they have heard of you? You're an investment banker in Goldman. People in Canada already...
They had an ad. They put an ad in the paper, and I applied.
They put an ad in the paper?
Yep.
And you responded? Wow.
That's
okay, that's how you got a job. Okay.
Yeah, well, now it's like
okay.
LinkedIn.
So is that how you got to be the governor as well? You responded to that.
Well, I would. They knew. They knew
you by then. Okay.
Well, no, but you know, for the governor as well. I mean, that's become the norm now. Right. Central banks do put ads. I don't think the Fed
right.
does.
So you were the deputy governor. You then went to the finance.
I went to the finance department and I worked with. I was right. one of the.
Then you become the governor of Bank.
And I became the governor, Stephen Harper.
And that was an easy time because there was no recession, there was no problems, the economy was going well?
Well, I remember saying to Diana, my wife, that, look, I mean, we had young kids, like, you know, this job, you know, you make eight decisions a year, you know exactly when you make those decisions, you know.
Like, oh, so
we can have
out,
work-life
happy.
Balance, it was going to work great. And 2 weeks after I started, Bear Stearns failed.
Ultimately, you finished after about, how many years were you at that?
Just under six.
Six, yeah. All right. You stepped down and say, now I'm going to go back and make money at Goldman Sachs, or what did you want to do
I
when
didn't
you stepped down?
I didn't step down. I was asked to, I was approached by the UK government to become governor of the Bank of England.
And is that like an illegal poaching? I mean, they're going to another country to take the central banker from another country? Did you think that was unusual?
Well, it was it was unusual. It was, I mean, they're unusual times. Technically, the head of state, Queen Elizabeth, is the same, so it's intercompany transfer.
Okay, so, yeah. All right, so when you're the head of the Central Bank of Canada, by the way, do you get your signature on the currency?
Yes.
Wow, so
yeah, that was, yeah.
That's pretty nice. When you hand somebody a dollar bill, you say to people, it's my signature, you ever tell them that?
Well, I don't.
You don't like brag? Maybe. Okay.
No.
All right, so you get offered to go to be the head of the Central Bank of England, and you said yes right away, and
I didn't actually. I turned it down a few times. It was a rolling conversation over the course of 2020.
Okay, so you ultimately took the job.
I then took the job. Yeah, I and eventually took the job.
Did it for about 8 years.
Yeah, just under. Yeah.
And when you're the head of the Central Bank of England, does the Queen call you for advice, or does she ever ask you anything? Do you ever meet the Queen very much, or?
I did have a few audiences
right.
with
Her Majesty, yeah. And the Prime Minister, he doesn't appoint you. The Prime Minister, or he or she, doesn't appoint you.
You're appointed by the Sovereign, yeah.
Oh, and by the Sovereign.
Yeah, it says greetings.
But who do you report? You report to the Board of Governors, I assume.
You report to the British people, really, through Parliament
okay.
is the way.
So
I mean, that's really the accountability. You can only be removed for incapacity, and that is a very...
Did you enjoy that? Job?
Job security? There.
I mean,
yes,
the job of
that.
Being the head of the Central
Did
Bank?
I enjoy that? It was, yes, I did. I mean, it was, you know, sometimes in the thick of it, it doesn't feel enjoyable, but it was incredibly challenging. It was, there was a lot going on, which is the reason why an outsider came in. So yes, I did enjoy it, the challenge of it.
So was it more fun to be the head of the Central Bank of Canada or the head of Central Bank of England?
I would say it was the challenges were much greater in the UK. You had an institution that had been totally transformed. You had a financial system that, was at the epicenter of the problems and had to be fixed. You had the elements of Brexit, what ultimately was Brexit, the Scottish referendum. You had a big management challenge.
Oh, you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it, yeah.
So you would recommend that job to anybody that gets offered it, right?
I did recommend it to, I recommended it to a number of people.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Not too long from now, the next meeting of COP will occur. I guess it's in Abu Dhabi or Dubai. And I assume you'll be there as a special envoy. So the last COP meeting didn't seem to make a lot of progress. What kind of progress do you think is going to be made this time? Will we actually get closer to getting to the target goals that you have?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing, let's just back up for 1 second. So if we go to the Paris COP 7 years ago, the world was headed towards 3.5 degrees warming by the end of this century. IEA came out last week, says on current policies, what actually is happening, we're headed to 2.4 degrees. So there has been quite a bit of progress. It's not enough. The goal is to be less than two, but just to be clear, in terms of the scale of investment and the policies there, we're making progress. This COP, and full credit to the presidency of the COP, the United Arab Emirates and Sultan Al-Jaber, is very focused on commercial solutions for climate change. And so first and foremost, an objective to get the major oil countries, producing countries and companies, to commit to zero methane, near zero methane by 2030, doubling the efficiency of producing and transporting oil and gas.
So you step down for the Central Bank of England, and then you ultimately become the special envoy of the UN, and now you're the chairman of Brookfield Asset Management, and now to be the chairman of Bloomberg, right?
Yeah.
What is Brookfield Asset Management?
So Brookfield Asset Management is, and Brookfield as a whole, is one of the world's largest alternative asset managers. The asset management business is the capital light bit. So this is where the 1,200 plus investment professionals of Brookfield reside. We oversee the investments that have 200,000 operating professionals. And you know, it's a business that invests effectively in the backbone of the global economy. So that means renewable power, one of the largest owners operators of renewable power, over 160 gigawatts of renewable power owned, operated, and developed. One of the largest real estate investors in the world. One of the pioneers, if not the pioneers, of infrastructure as an asset class. So $160 billion under management in infrastructure, and that's everything from energy infrastructure to data infrastructure. Big private equity business and a very large private credit business as well.
Now, you have many jobs currently. You're not the head of the central bank in England anymore or Canada, but among other things, you're the special, I guess, advisor to the UN.
Special envoy.
Yeah. UN on climate change. Is that right?
That's correct. On climate action and finance.
All right. So what does that really mean? What are you doing? You're telling the people in each country they should go more electric or don't burn as much oil or what?
It's really about, so a lot of, if there's a common theme to my career, it's working at the intersection of public policy and private markets. So a lot of that in central banking, that's what you're doing. And that's what I'm doing as this special envoy. And really it's to organize the private financial system to be ready for climate change, not just the physical impacts of climate change, but to be part of the solution, to be able to provide capital, get capital to where it's needed to right. get emissions
so
down.
So in this position, which I assume is probably an unpaid position.
Very much so.
You know, people are looking at you all the time and say, you're the special envoy for climate action. You can't fly in a private plane so easily, I guess, right? And do you take public transportation or are you... Can you drive your own car if it's an oil and gas car or not?
Well, it might not surprise you. I have an electric car, as you would expect. Most of the time that is charged in Quebec. I live just on the border with Quebec, and that's therefore 100% renewable power.
Are you conscious that people are always looking at you as a special envoy saying, you know, he's using too much, he's got too big a carbon footprint, or you don't worry about that?
Well, no, people will make that, particularly if they don't want to confront the tough issues around climate change, the big blocks of what's actually going to make a difference. They'll go to, you know, anything you're wearing, you know, there's plastic on my watch strap and therefore there's an element of hydrocarbons in that.
But if you have an oil and gas investment that comes to an investment committee and you're the special envoy, do you have to recuse yourself or how do you?
No, well, we have a very clear approach at Brookfield. As I say, we're one of the largest renewable energy providers, and we are systematically going through our assets to ensure that as much as possible they have business plans that are consistent with the transition towards net zero. And we do that first and foremost from a fiduciary perspective. We see being low carbon or lowering your carbon footprint, to put it that way, as one of the fundamental drivers of value in the market. And I have to say, you know, we're being proven right. We know in real time that the mapping of the temperature increase to the extreme weather events is worse than we thought 10 years ago. So actually the goal, even though the goal's getting tougher to get, it's becoming more important to get there. And the third thing we know is the mapping. You can map specific actions to specific emission reductions, and it can become very clear whether you're making a difference on that. And what we've seen, I'll make two points if I may on that. One is, if we go back 5 years ago, clean energy investments, so that's wind, solar, battery storage, and let's say EV charging, those types of things, about $500 billion worldwide dollars spent. This year, last year $1.2 trillion, this year $1.8 trillion. Okay, that is 1.6 times what we're spending on conventional energy investment. And that's starting to move, you know, so you can see in real time what's happening in terms of emission reduction, solution emission reduction. And as well, you know, from a financial, we're at Bloomberg, you know, and talking a bit about Brookfield as well. From a financial perspective, first off, the numbers are huge in terms of the, you know, the action is in the clean, not in the conventional. Secondly, the information set around whether or not a company, doesn't matter what the industry is, could be tech, could be motors, you know, motors, whatever, services. The information about what your carbon footprint is today and where it's going is exploding, so you can tell who's part of the solution, who's part of the problem, and that is driving value.
Some of the emerging market countries say, well, wait a second, you guys in the United States and Western Europe, you had a century or so to pollute as much as you wanted. Now you're asking us, as we're emerging, to give away the right to use some of these same kinds of fuels that you use. It's not fair, they would say. What do you respond to that?
It's not fair. Unfortunately, the disproportionate impacts of climate change will also fall on those same countries and the people in those countries. You know, Africa, 17% of the world's people, 3% of the world's emissions run rate, but hundreds of millions of people will be in uninhabitable climate if we don't get this on top. So we've got to all get together and deal with it, first point. And then the second is that now, given the progress that has been made in the economics of wind, solar, storage particularly, they are becoming the low-cost solutions for those countries as well.
You have an electric car, you said, you drive an electric car, right? So some people say electric cars are not perfect in the sense that to get the minerals you need for some of their batteries, for example, you have to do a lot of mining of things, and that is not great for the environment either. But on the whole, you would say electric vehicles are infinitely better than carbon.
Here we are, Bloomberg, engines. And I can reference BNEF research on this, which they actually show, depending on where you are, where the crossover point is that your electric car net impact on the environment is, where it's better than an internal combustion engine car. If you're in a place like Canada, where you've got a lot of clean power, 85% of our power is zero emission in Canada. A little plug for Canadian manufacturing there, by the way. The crossover is about 18 months. Even if you're in China, where you have still in the installed base a lot of coal, it's, well, I'll have to check on, I'll do BNEF and check the number, but it's around 5 years, okay? So, and that includes the embedded carbon from all those processes.
For somebody who's watching and says, I'd like to be like Mark Carney, successful at almost everything he's touched, say maybe not hockey perfectly, but pretty good. What was it? Hard work? It's just being good genes? Smarter than everybody else? So what is it, luck? What do you think it is that enable you to do all these things? And you're still a very young man by my standards. You're 58 years old. That's right. A teenager to me. So what do you think made this possible?
Well, look, luck is a huge element of it, without question. You make your own luck to some extent if you're doing things that you like and you care about, so you're around opportunities. You know, I wouldn't have been governor of the Bank of England if I hadn't wanted to be in public policy and was the governor of Bank of Canada, for example. But I, at least in my experience, maybe with my genes or whatever. Like, you can't get away from hard work.
Thanks for listening. To hear more of my interviews, you can subscribe and download my podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen.